Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest has so much to say that I'm guessing this is not going to be her only visit to me. I certainly hope not. My guest name is Lee Gant, and Lee, I'm going to just introduce, and you can correct it if you like. She is an absolute crafts genius, a knitter, and an author and a knitting teacher, and that's really the tip of the iceberg. That's what you see right away when you see Lee. I want to go to you and ask you to talk about yourself, in as much as the first chapter in your book is about yourself and why you took to knitting. Will you talk about that? Just tell that story about the shop you went into and they left you alone.
Right. Before I found that knitting shop, I had spent many years in trouble with the drugs and alcohol, and my childhood wasn't exactly comfortable. Uh-huh. And I was in the throes of despair and depression, and I had actually set a fire the night before I found that yarn shop.
Mm.
And
to your own home?
In the field on the way to the store.
Oh, okay.
So the trek in the morning to get cigarettes was actually to see the pile of debris that I had burned, and I don't know why I wanted to see what destruction I had caused. But
because I think people have a natural tendency to want to leave a mark on this earth, and if it maybe can't be positive, then
exactly,
it's the "I was here." It's tagging.
I think so.
Oh.
So that was another story that was going to come later. But,
okay,
but it just happened that they were there and
in the store.
In the store. And
why were you going to a knitting store? Oh, you were. You were going to the cigarette store.
I just was hungover and needing to get cigarettes.
Of course.
And
okay.
They were on the sidewalk, and I hadn't noticed them before. So the store must have just opened.
Come on, come on.
But they invited me in, and I remembered my mother and her sister knitting as a kid, and how fascinated I was with it, and that my aunt had taught me when I was 8 to knit.
Uh-huh. So there were some positives in this life that was difficult.
Exactly. But I didn't realize that knitting was a tool that I could turn to until much later. So I just thought it was nice to have a place to go to where people acted like they cared about me. Because until that time, I had pretty much sunk into my own brain.
Sure.
And wasn't allowing anybody to help me or...
So you ended up in this knitting shop because you were invited to come in by these...
The gals that were Carol, the mom, was standing in the doorway when I walked by.
What made them invite you into the knitting store?
I think I paused there long enough, and the colors and the smell were coming out the door.
That smell of wool.
Yes, yes.
By the way, the way you talk about scent and color in your book is so powerful, because who doesn't know the smell of wool? Go ahead.
Exactly.
I'm just having a little moment to myself here.
Yeah. I do, but now I forgot the question.
Oh, okay.
That's fine.
So you were in the knitting store. You were invited to come in.
Yes.
They left you there for a minute.
Well, after a little while of touching all the yarn and just zoning into that world of all the colors, they did. It was lunchtime, and they were going to go to the deli for lunch. So they asked if I wanted anything to eat, and I said no, because I didn't know them well enough to say, sure, you can buy me lunch.
Yeah.
And I couldn't afford
and you were hungry,
it.
In fact.
Right, yeah. So when they left, the first thing I thought of is how much of this can I take home with me?
Oh, the yarn.
The yarn and the anything. It didn't. I just was instantly, something happened to me.
You wanted to be part of the yarn and the color and the scent and what it
Right, and I wanted to have it. I needed to have it.
Oh, so it
was comfort to me, and I wanted to... I didn't know what I would do with it even, but I just, it was something that I wanted. I did a lot of stealing as a kid, because if there were things that I felt that I should have, that I wasn't allowed to have, I would take it.
I wondered about that. And I thought, I didn't know whether it was stealing so that for drugs and cigarettes and addiction-related things.
I stole things just to steal, mm-hmm. to get away with it, because I was very rebellious.
Well, that's a whole other bad behavior. That's a whole other kind of stealing, though.
Exactly. Yes. But this was different. This was.
But you didn't.
I didn't.
And how did this lead to your getting back? See, I read your book. And it is, I got to say, everybody, you need to get this book. The title is Love in Every Stitch, Stories of Healing.
Of Knitting and Healing.
And it wasn't what I thought it would be from the title.
No.
It is so powerful. And every story, I had said to you that if this were a TV show, which it should be, you would be up there garnering Emmys. Every story of healing is so powerful, and you sneak in on them.
That was the fun with words that
so powerful. The writing is so gorgeous. Love in Every Stitch, everybody. And you can get that on Amazon?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore.
It is so powerful. It is so worth reading, chapter at a time.
Well, thank you.
You got into the knitting store, and how did that translate to you did it?
They eventually could see that I was probably a bit of a troubled soul, and I became very happy hanging out with them every day, and the customers who came in, and I started to feel better about myself, and then they asked me if I would knit a sweater for the store.
Oh, yes.
And they would pay me to do it, and at the time, you know, money was the driving force, so I said
I would. How are you getting along living?
Welfare or whatever. I don't even remember.
You were on your own, scrapping by as best you could.
I had my raising kids, single mom.
Oh, okay. You had children then.
Right.
I didn't realize.
Mm-hmm. And I wasn't doing a very good job because I was trying to figure out what was wrong with me.
Yes.
And it made it difficult to be able to parent the first time around. I actually did get a second chance.
And how did that come about?
The girls' second marriage, and my girls were in vitro babies, number 110, and I have a 22-year-old twin girls.
Oh, I did not know that.
So,
wonderful.
So I had a chance to do it right.
So you had children from before, and then these two were the second round.
Second round, exactly. Oh, okay. 18 years apart.
My goodness. And are you in touch with?
Oh, absolutely.
All of them.
I see my first two all the time. And the one thing that I did do right with them was told them that, you know, I love them all the time and let them know that that was the truth. Even though I might be in jail or in trouble, I did the best I could.
Oh, that's a tricky business, letting your children know you love them, even though your behavior doesn't seem like it is the best for them.
And that was my problem growing up, was that no matter how much my mother and father might have loved me, I never felt it. So I acted on that assumption that I was not loved. And that was where the torment came from. And I wanted to medicate my brain into a different world than the one I was living in, because it was not very comfortable to be where I was. So
in reading your book, I got the feeling that this knitting I want to talk about knitting too in a minute, but the knitting that you have done, that the first knitting you did here was just kind of taking the frayed and broken threads of your own life and knitting them back together into something beautiful.
Bingo. That says it perfectly.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's so clear from what you say.
Yeah.
And then you have gone on to look at other kind of slightly lost souls and bring them back to life through knitting. What is it about knitting that brings people back to life?
There's something magic in taking a string and two sticks and wrapping loops around the sticks and building a three-dimensional fabric that you can hold up to somebody. It's tangible, and they can see what you've done.
And practical, and say, keep warm and
exactly.
safe and beautiful.
And there's nothing like hand-knit socks.
That's the truth. And, you know, when you see baby gifts,
exactly,
the ones that are hand-knit carry something special. And I used to ask that question all the time, and nobody answered it ever to my satisfaction. It's like, who discovered that you could take two sticks and a string? I mean, how did this
I read a book a long time ago about the history of knitting and when it came about,
mm-hmm.
and it was such a large volume that I never did get never got through it all. But something about in the back in the day with the kings and their stockings or whatever.
But still, to come to that conclusion,
exactly.
That's a whole other
very,
thing.
Some very creative people decided to wrap some yarn around sticks and make things.
It is amazing to me.
Yeah.
The colors. When I first learned about your book and what you did, 30 separate events came just smacking back into my head about knitting, about the sweater my mother knit me when I was in the third grade, and I took it off for a minute and put it on a bench, and it was stolen.
Oh.
Well, who wouldn't want to take that, of course?
Yeah.
The things that the hand knit, there is something about it, and I'm sitting here stammering. Talk more about your journey from the time you went into that store and you made that sweater. You remembered how to knit? That's how you made the sweater? Because it never leaves you?
I did. I was surprised, actually, because I hadn't knit anything to wear at the early age. And I don't even know how long I continued to knit as an 8-year-old,
mm-hmm.
probably for a short while. But I put it away and moved on to, you know, building birdhouses or something else. And this was a cabled sweater, so there were a lot of things to do. And I do remember struggling with the instructions and just doing one function at a time.
Oh, so whatever you could follow instructions.
Right. I had paid attention to my mother's knitting books. And so when she was knitting, I knew what her hands were doing because I read the directions in her book. But I surprised myself, and I was so caught up in it that I didn't want to stop. The drinks went untouched, and something just clicked and changed, and I felt good sitting there knitting
mm-hmm.
for somebody else who believed that I was capable of good things and that I could do it.
That's such a package.
So, yeah.
There's everything that it was. How did you start teaching knitting?
I worked in a yarn shop, and customers would come in and ask questions. They needed help with their projects because they would be relatively new, and I was able to help them. And the reward from that was so great that I turned it around to wanting to catch the children before they before they turn to drugs and alcohol, and when things aren't so good at home. Maybe I want the kids to know that. It's not just grandma sport. Anybody can knit. And that if they knew that knitting is a tool, something that you can turn to when things are starting to get rough, then they might try it. Or
is that part of what you teach?
Exactly.
You come right out
exactly.
and say that.
I come right out
oh,
and tell
good.
These kids that this, you might not, it might not seem so easy at first or comfortable, or you don't get to that, you know, meditative, wonderful state right away. You have to practice a bit and get better at it. But if you stay with it and you keep making stitch after stitch after stitch, you'll get there. And that when things go, you know, not so well, or you're tired of being in your little, you know,
uh-huh.
gizmo world.
You want to use more than your thumbs.
Right, to text. Or when you're tired of your computer world, there's a basket of soft yarn and some nice wooden needles that you can actually pick up and knit a scarf for your friend or...
Mm-hmm.
Or just something about the process for me is almost more than the finished product itself. So I teach them that too. It's because they always want to know.
It empties your mind in a nice way?
In a way.
How does that work?
There's actually brain chemistry that happens when you do that and when you make things with your hands. And
you can see an EEG change from stress to
absolutely.
Calm, you think, during knitting?
Betsy Ann Corkill at stitchlinks.com did a study and a survey or research on the psychology or physio, whatever, behind knitting and what it actually does to your brain. So she kind of wrote the book on the medical side of how it actually works, the chemical
side.
Say
that link again, please.
Stitchlinks.com.
Okay.
She's in the UK,
mm-hmm.
and she wrote a book, Knitting for Wellness. I can't remember the title.
Okay.
I feel very
knitting
bad.
For Well. Okay, well,
sorry,
what's Betsy her name
Ann,
again?
Betsy Ann Corkill.
Corkill.
Right.
C-O-R-K-H-I-L-L.
I think, something I do like believe
that.
It's something
you know,
like
I can
that,
see, and you say, if this is, that knitting is such an active thing that you can go very quickly from being victimized and put upon to being the person in charge.
Exactly. And it,
you are in charge.
And when you get to the state where you've knit long enough to be what we call mindless knitting. It's mm-hmm. just knit. Mm-hmm. You don't have to think about a pattern. You just continually the repetitive motion. So you get into that. It opens up a place in your head where you can go anywhere you want to go.
And
there's no pain lives there. The physical pain go away. The mental traumas go away.
This is why it's a grandma's sport.
This is why I want it to be everybody
right.
to know what that feels like.
My husband was kind of saying in a slightly disdainful way the other day, he was in a class, and he said, and there was an old woman in there knitting all the way through the class. And I said, that doesn't mean she wasn't paying attention.
She was actually absorbing more than the ones
who
weren't
knitting.
Talk about
that. Okay.
It's been proven that yes. when you're in that state, the part of your brain that's focused down on the act of knitting itself allows the other part to open up and receive information. So knitting in a lecture, whoever's doing the knitting is actually getting more out of the lecture than those who are just staring at the professor.
Okay, I am so glad to hear you say that.
Yes.
Because when you talk about mindless knitting, I'm asking you, doesn't that just mean you don't have to pay attention to what your fingers are doing because they know what they're doing?
No.
What is it?
It's about being in a state of mindlessness mm-hmm. where, yes, there's mindless knitting so that you're allowed more okay. of the state of mindlessness. When you have to function and pay attention
nice
to color changes,
uh-huh.
right. The place is very empty, and you can fill it with, you can go stand under a waterfall in Hawaii, you can relive experiences, and that's what happened for me, is I was able to find a place that was so comfortable mm-hmm. that I was able to connect back inside myself to who I am and mm-hmm. find me in there. And I'm okay.
And apparently the you in there is a very creative, clever person.
I didn't know that, actually.
But you said you went from knitting at 8 to making birdhouses. So that's still a creative thing.
I made things all the time. I'm a puzzle solver. I like to give me sticks and moss and some lichen off the rocks and a few, you know, stones and some string, and I can build something. And my brother and I built a lot of interesting forts in the woods. And
okay, so there's that. There's also inside you some brilliant organizational abilities, apparently, because that knitting requires that. There's some organizational skills.
I don't know where that came from, though.
Oh, okay.
But I do like the math of it all.
Yes.
And I try not to tell people about the math of knitting right off the bat, because a lot of people don't like the math.
Well, they think they can't do math.
Right.
And they can't.
So I write the numbers for you. That's how I got into the designing part.
That's what I was going to ask you that next.
I draw a little picture of a piece of clothing that I see hanging on a rack somewhere that I like, and I do a little gauge swatch that nobody likes to do. And
to see how many
stitches equal an inch.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Of course.
And then I just plug in the numbers and fire away.
Yeah, do you have a design book coming out?
I do.
Tell us.
With Stackpole Books, coming out summer 2016, called Dress Me Up.
Oh.
And it's patterns for young girls and juniors, sizes 6 to 11, 12. There's a market that hasn't been, there's no patterns for the teenagers out there, and they really don't want to wear our lacy shawls and some of the clothing, the pattern books that are out there are not geared towards them. So I really would like them to be able to have the moms, the parents say, oh, would you wear this? And have them say yes, so that the moms get to knit it. Or hopefully teenagers
uh-huh.
would be able to knit for themselves things that they would actually wear, you know, to high school or out. So it's,
another
idea.
Thing. That I did want to ask you about, because it was my own experience in a life where you might have to wait for a long time for something to take place. For example, recovery or getting your braces off mm-hmm. or to fill in the blank, you know, for you to mature to a point where you're comfortable with something that you weren't before. In knitting a garment, you see pretty much instant gratification. You see immediate something. You don't have to wait for a year.
Well, exactly. It grows one stitch at a time. So whether you choose to do a couple of rows a day or sit sometimes like I do for 6 hours and knit nonstop because it's my addiction and mm-hmm. my passion. Mm-hmm. And the whole time I'm knitting, I'm comfortable. So why wouldn't I want to do it all the time?
You just touched on something else that I think is really nice. Like everything you touch on, I think is really nice, is that it is your addiction and your passion. So there is something very good about saying, you know, I do have this addictive personality and let's substitute a really good one for the really destructive one.
Exactly.
And in other words, just embrace that addictive side and put it to something that's going to be productive.
Right. Because I think I'm probably always going to have that addictive behavior.
Yes, thank goodness.
And I'll be happy to collect yarn and needles and continue to knit as long as I'm able.
You can hold on to something.
Exactly.
What about, well, color and scent? I mean, wet wool and dry wool and different kinds of wool. And the touch of them, I mean, some itch, some are soothing, some are you just want to sink your teeth into them or your fingers. And it's a totally tactile experience. And I noticed in your book, and I've noticed this anyway, even in fabric stores, that women go through and they touch fabrics.
Touch everything.
And while they're stroking things, they're talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a happy padded cell. I mean, it's you're surrounded by safety.
Mm-hmm.
What about that exposing yourself? Because I see that in your book with people talk about themselves. Maybe quilting bees is the same thing.
It is. I think whether you're sitting in a group stitching quilts together or sewing or painting or it's I think it's the same camaraderie and the same thing happens when you get into a group. We share stories. And
because you're comfortable,
because
you can expose yourself.
Exactly. That's the part of the brain that opens up and allows you to talk from your insides.
Yes. And I think people want to do that. I don't think anybody likes small talk.
No.
There are more important things to say.
Right. I don't know how it works. It just happens.
Yes, it does.
The groups,
talk about the children that you like teaching kids to knit. Are you getting a lot of those? Because, you know, those crocheted squares that we did in the 60s, they were called granny squares, if you recall.
Yes, they still are.
I'm sure they still are. But there's that old lady quality.
The knitting is huge right now, and it just continues to grow in all
that's
the
wonderful.
Age groups. And
what's the youngest you've ever taught?
A 5-year-old.
Uh-huh.
And that's really pushing it because their motor skills are not really...
Uh-huh.
You know, enough to hold the needles and understand the concept.
Do they have needles that are rounded so that they can't hurt themselves?
Oh, they wouldn't hurt themselves.
Oh, okay.
Nah, they're
all
fine.
Right. Okay.
But regular needles, regular yarn. She did a couple of giant holy rows and she was finished with it and that was it. But she learned how to knit. So
that's great.
I just like the idea of... I cast on for them first.
I read that.
And put a couple of rows on, and then I hand it to them. And in 30 seconds, they've made the motion of knitting a stitch and taking it off the needle. And I'll just explode with, "You're a knitter. That's it.
Oh,
you've done it."
That's so nice.
And in such a short time, they feel accomplished. And I said, "Do it again. Do it again.
But how clever to start children or everybody.
I start everybody that way.
So you start where they can be successful, not where
exactly.
they can be frustrated and say, "Never mind this, I'm going home."
Exactly, because I want them to be successful instantly, to keep going.
Yeah.
And by the time they get across a row and turn around and come back, they're into it, they're excited, I'm excited, the whole room is excited,
great.
We have a new knitter, yay, join the community. I mean, I want everybody to be able to join this world of creating something with your
hands. And people have to go look for it now. When I was growing up, we don't have to tell anybody when this was, but, you know, let's just say in the late 40s, every department store had a knitting department.
Right.
And you would go, it was just a part of life. If you wanted something, you would go pick the yarn and you would knit it. Now people have to look for you.
Right. And
so they're doing that in bigger numbers, huh?
I'm hoping that it gets back to, I think every school should have knitting instruction.
Yes.
I think every teen center should have a free knitting
group. So you
group.
Can work on
I
that.
Think, exactly. That's my goal. That's my
wonderful.
I think everyone should have the opportunity to learn how to knit and find out what it is that I'm talking about.
Okay.
That at least I get out of knitting, and I know there's 53 million knitters out there already. So we must be doing something right.
And then you're not dependent upon the stores for what you want to wear if you have some idea of the color. I mean, you're the boss.
Exactly.
I like things where you're the boss.
Well, I don't actually wear anything that I knit. And I don't know why. I don't know why. I just either give it away or...
But for girls, you know, I'm thinking of younger girls,
right,
who know what they want and they know what's... I want to ask you this because I am ultimately about love letters. And if you were to write a love letter right now, who would you write it to? And have you ever?
A love letter.
I could see. I mean... Are those two women who invited you into their shop still alive?
We tried to find them. Mm-hmm. I hope the book finds them so I can thank them for saving my life.
Because that love letter.
That would be.
Let's just talk about what you could do, because sometimes you do it and then the opportunity presents itself.
That would be, yeah.
What if you wrote to them and, I mean, I want to do it. What if you wrote to them and you mailed it to yourself?
Oh,
and
said,
essentially, I'm writing this love letter to you. I'm going to mail it to me and hold on to it for you until I find you. And who knows?
That would be cool. I would do that. I almost said I would. If I had to write a love letter,
mm-hmm. I do.
Oh.
You don't have to, but let's talk about if you might want to.
I might write it to myself. The me that I didn't pay. That I didn't take good care of. So, and the me that I've been working on bringing out of the scary place into this, so that I can be one person finally.
Oh, that would be beautiful.
I might send a love letter to my other self.
Good.
Who's coming out of hiding.
Good. Welcoming yourself
into my new self.
Yeah,
exactly.
So if you write that, I hope you do, and people do that. I mean, we've had guests who have done that beautifully. It's such a legitimate, important thing to write. If you do that and you mail it to yourself, and then you'll get it on your pile of mail with that stamp in your own handwriting. And when that happens, I want you to call me and you tell me if your heart didn't just give a little thud at seeing that in your mail pile.
Wow. Gave me a thud just thinking
good.
About it.
That thud is so important. That's the thud of, hooray, you're a knitter. That's
yes.
the thud of any success, isn't it?
Yes.
Realization.
What a great idea.
And just keep it. Stick it in your bottom of your knitting basket, and in 150 years, your great-grandchildren will find that. Great-great-grandchildren
yes.
will find that, and they will know what a legacy they have.
What a great idea.
It's strengthening.
Thank you for that.
It's strengthening the generation next to know that they let them learn a little something about Grammy.
I hadn't thought of that. I guess I'm still relatively new at being who I am right now.
But isn't that worth passing down?
What a great idea.
Yes.
I hadn't thought of
that.
You
know, for a great-grandchild to say, my great-grandmother, look what she did. She was, you know, doing all kinds of things that were not good for her and that were really regretful.
You mean I have some value that I
yeah.
could? I'm just starting to learn that. So this is all...
Okay,
how exciting.
I'm so glad you are, because you're really leadership here. Will you come back and talk about a couple of the people in your class?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'd love to.
Let's do that. I'm particularly interested in actually every word you have said here and in your book. This book, people, Love in Every Stitch. It sounds like one thing, and it is love in every stitch, but it is a different kind of love. It is bringing with love other people back from the edge. You didn't just stop with yourself.
No.
You've been reaching out to others, to people mm-hmm. who have been sick. Okay, let's talk about the woman who had breast cancer and came to knit, and your children's class. Okay, I'm going to say goodbye for now, and thank you so much for doing this with me.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so overexcited. I'm going to go calm down now. So until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye, and please remember that if you think you need a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion, just like knitting is. And it's kind of the same. You're in charge. Whatever you say goes. Thank you, dear.
Thank you.
So happy we met.